Some of us, if not all of us, have heard at one time or another someone say or tell us when they're kind of down and out, says, you know what, my life is like a country song. Sounds cliche, I know. But if you think about it, country songs originally were made due to life experiences. I'm going to read to you the lyrics of a country song. I'm not going to sing because I'm not a singer. And after hearing the lyrics, I want to see if you agree with that this statement. Here goes. It says, I've had choices since the day that I was born. There were voices that told me right from wrong. If I had listened, no, I wouldn't be here today, living and dying with the choices I've made. I was tempted by an early age. I found I liked drinking. Oh, and I never turned it down. There were loved ones, but I turned them all away. Now I'm living and dying with the choices I've made. I've had choices since the day I was born. There were voices that told me right from wrong. If I had listened, no, I wouldn't be here today, living and dying with the choices I've made. I guess I'm paying for the things that I've done. If I could go back, oh Lord knows I'd run. But I'm still losing this game of life I play, losing and dying with the choices I've made. I've had choices since the day that I was born. There were voices that told me right from wrong. If I had listened, no, I wouldn't be here today, living and dying with the choices I've made. Living and dying with the choices I've made. The song was written by Bill Yates and Michael Conn. It was sung by George Jones. George decided to sing this song. It was released in 1999, the year that he was driving drunk and he had a terrible accident and he almost lost his life. The title of my sermon, brethren, is Choices. Choices. Many of us have choices in our lives. Some choices we make are wise ones, and other ones not so wise. It may be the fact that we are living with the consequences from bad choices, or the consequences of someone else, our grandfathers or our great-grandfathers, making bad choices, and yet we are living under that. We do that, and some people live with bad choices half of their lives. And they're in their 30s or 40s, and they're still making bad choices. But it takes a moment until one day you say, that's enough. I've had it. I'm not living this way anymore when God calls us. We have a choice whether we say, I'm not going to live this way. I'm bound and determined. I'm not going to do this anymore. I've had it with this way of life. There, we made that choice. That's why we're here today. We made a wise choice. We chose God's laws. Was it an easy choice to make? Was it an easy way to change or to follow God's law? No. The reason why? Because that means we had to submit to God's way of living. The whole word of submit, many people don't like that word. But nonetheless, we made it. It was our decision. The Sabbath services, we made that choice. Nobody called us. Hey, are you going to make it? Better make it here. No, we're here because we want to be. We made that choice. We're not the ones that say, my wife or my mother or somebody drug me to church. You know, no, we're here because we want to be here. We made that choice. And you know why, brethren? Because we know the scripture. Because we're in it for our own spiritual wealth, brethren. It's spiritual wealth. Philippians 2:12 tells us, because we are working out our own salvation with fear and trembling. It's our salvation. If somebody calls you and says, you're coming to services today, whether I'm going to have to drag you by the hair and come in, whose choice is it? Whose choice? Theirs or yours? And the minute that that person is not in your life, I'm not doing this anymore. It's like a dog that's been chained up for so long because you want him there in that yard. You want him chained up. And you let go of that dog out of that chain, he's gone. God wants us to make our choice. And you know what? A lot of people, our loved ones, are afraid for us to make our choice. So that's why you're coming with me. Choices are made not so much due to the environment. I've had good friends of mine that were in an awful environment. They had awful parents. But they woke up one day and they said, I am not going to live like this anymore. I'm going to do what's right. And they didn't have the Spirit of God. But they were sick and tired of living the way they were. They didn't like the way their parents were going. Was it easy? No. Even though someone who is raised in a loving, moral, and clean environment without the violence comes out a better person than one who does not. That doesn't ensure anything. Because we have a free will, brethren. That's what God's greatest frustration with us. Although there have been some in God's church who have come from a bad environment and yet have excelled in our church. And plus they're faithful to his word. And there have been those who have been raised in a good environment and gone completely off kilter. It's nothing new. I'm not giving you something that, you know, it's breaking news. Let's go to 3:11, brethren. This tells you has gone from the very beginning. Genesis 3:11. Genesis 3:11, it says, breaking into the thought, because God is looking for Adam and Eve, and he finds them, and he says, hey, you know, what's up? And he said, on 10, I'll start with 10. He says, he answered, I heard you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. And 11, he said, and God said, who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from? And it goes on to 12. Get a load of this. The man said, the woman you put there here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree and I ate it. So he's blaming it on Eve. How many people that you know have that same scenario? It's not my fault. No. Somebody else told me to do that. That is God's greatest frustration. There's a saying, the day you look in the mirror and accept your responsibilities is the day you become an adult. A lot of people don't, old people don't accomplish that. You got to own it. That's a buzzword going on right now. You got to know it. You got to own it. You make it your own. You made the mistake. You own it. I wonder what would have happened if Adam would have said, "You know what, God, I blew it. You know, I ate of the fruit. You know, yeah, she ate it, but you know, I should have told her not to. And what she was doing, I should have done. I wonder what the outcome would have been. There are examples of bad choices of individuals who made wise and unwise choices in the Bible. There's a story there of a prodigal son. You know, he went to an aha moment. He was out there eating pig slop. And he said, man, you know, I'm going to go back home. But the classic example that I have and I've read and I had, and I, you feel kind of sorry for the guy. Let's go to 1 Samuel. It's about Eli and his sons. 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 12. We're going to read from verse 12 to 25. And I'm going to dabble in it. And I picked a reader's version of the NIV. Okay? So you can follow with me. It seems like it grabs the idea better. In chapter 2, verse 12, it says, Eli's sons were good for nothing. It opens it up. They were good for nothing. They didn't honor the Lord. And 13, when any of the people came to offer sacrifice, here's what the priest would do. While the meat was being boiled, the servant of the priest would come with a large fork in his hand. Now, I've often wondered, in several scriptures it says, meat being boiled. And you say, why would they boil meat? Well, brethren, James and I, we harvested a range, a pasture-raised chicken, right? And we ate some. And we had to boil it. I think a rock would have been softer than the meat that we ate. Because they're lean. And the animals back then were free range and grass-fed. And they weren't grass-fed in a half-acre lot. And then they sell it to you at, Whole Foods. No, they were grass-fed for miles. So the meat would have to be boiled to tender it up. 15. He says, even before the fat was burned, the priest's servants would come over. Okay? That was a no-no. He would speak to the person who was offering the sacrifice. He would say, give the priest some meat to cook. He wouldn't accept the boiled meat from you. He'll only accept raw meat. Now, brethren, the custom with the people was, the priest's custom was that when any man offered a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come with three-pronged flesh hook in his hand while the meat was boiling. And when he would thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot, and the priest would take for himself all the flesh hook brought up. So they did it in Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. Now, the peace offering would take the breast and the right shoulder. But Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas, wanted better cuts. And they went so far as to get the raw meat. And you say, why did they get the raw meat for back then? Well, they were selling it, brother. I'm pretty sure they had henchmen. Now imagine, they would take a raw meat from several families, and they probably had an ox cart full of raw meat, and they'd sell it to a vendor in the marketplace and make a little money. Totally off of what, a total ridicule, making the whole ceremony a circus. Now, in 18, sometimes the person would say to him, hey, man, this is what you're doing is wrong. Let's burn the fat off first. Then take what you want. But the servant would answer, no. Hand it over right now. If you don't want, I'll take it from you. That sin of Eli's sons were very great in the Lord's sight. That's because they were not treating his offering respect. Now, get a hold of it. Eli was an old man. He was 98 years old. He kept hearing everything his sons were doing to all the Israelites. He also heard his sons were sleeping with women who served at the entrances, at the tent of the meeting. So Eli said to their sons, why are you doing these things? All the people are telling me about the evil things that you're doing. And what does he tell them? 24, no, my sons, the report I hear is bad. And spreading along the Lord's people. 25, if a person sins against someone else, God can help that sinner. But if anyone sins against the Lord, who can help him? In spite of that, their sons then had lost respect all for Eli. They didn't pay no attention, and they did whatever they want. Now, what did Eli do wrong there? Remember, Eli was not just a happy-go-lucky priest. He was a high priest, brethren. He was the ninth judge of Israel. He was a judge and he was a high priest. What he should have said, he had guards and he had scribes, he had people that at his disposal. He should have gone and told the guards, you know what, take these guys out of, you're no longer priests. You're out. And by what they took care of, how they took care of people, they would execute him. And he would have, that would have been a lot better for him if he would have done that. It would have been a lot better for his lineage if he would have done that instead of trying to talk to his, and these weren't boys. Because Eli was 98, that puts their, they were on 50, some might say even 60. So they weren't young men. Eli the enabler did not get any respect. I want to ask, let's see. I want to pass something out to you guys. I'm going to ask Mike to see if you can pass these out. If you can do so. Take one for yourself, Mike. And see if there's everybody. So you guys can follow, and some of you might have seen this already, and some of you might not have. But if you have, it's like a review. But to me, when I read all about Levitical priesthood, and everything's in my head, and I'm trying to, you know, decipher it. Now, this chart is a busy chart. But I want you to focus on the right down Aaron's lineage. And off to, to your right, down that lineage by Ithamar. Down, and you'll see Eli and Phinehas. Phinehas was his oldest boy. Now, while you're doing this, is so if you see that's it, some lineages, and if you see a red dot on the bottom, that means that's as far as that their lineage went. It was cut off. And if you see Eli's lineage, it was cut off too. Now, while you're reading that, many times back in the day, they used to have sons follow their father's footsteps. Now, maybe Eli was hoping that his boys would be priests, even though maybe they really weren't cut out to be priests. My mom, several years ago, went to a dentist in Mexico, a friend of the family. He was a friend of mine. And after he finished with her, they had some chit-chat time, and his dad was a dentist. But we'd congregate edge of town, and it's a small town. We didn't have paved roads. It was not uncommon to see horses running up and down the streets. And we'd all congregate in horses, and everybody would show their stuff, you know, if you call that. But he was a good horseman, and he knew how to handle a rope. But his dad was a dentist, and he loved, you know, the agrarian type, the plowing of the fields and the planting, the whole, he really liked it. And when he was telling us, when he was talking to my mom, his dad has passed away, and so his mom, he was telling her, he said, you know, I never wanted to be a dentist. He says, I was a dentist because my dad wanted me to be a dentist. And my mom was kind of surprised, but she was sad. He says, "What?" She said, "Yeah, I saw you on top of a tractor or irrigating fields, or you were somebody's ranch." And he said, "I kind of surprised." Yeah, he said, "My dad wanted me a dentist." So maybe that's what Eli did to his sons. You're going to be priests because I'm a priest, and these guys weren't cut out to be priests. So get a hold on verse 20. Let's go to 1 Samuel 2 and go to 27, brother. That's a problem with choice, though, you know. Verse 27 of chapter 2, verse 1 Samuel, 1 Samuel. It says, and a man of God came to Eli. Now get a hold of that first sentence. A man of God came to Eli. Now, the high priests were the mediators for God and the Israelite nation. What is a man of God talking to Eli for? Instead of God communicating straight to Eli. You know why? Because he lost his communication. He lost the disconnect with God. That tells you right there. This man told him, the Lord says, I made myself clearly known. He was reminding him about this chart. Clearly known to your relatives who lived long ago. I did it when they were in Egypt under Pharaoh's rule. And verse 28, at that time I chose Aaron from your family line to be my priest. I chose him out of the tribes of Israel. I told him to go up to my altar. I told him to burn incense. I chose him to wear a linen apron when he served me. I also gave his family all the food offerings presented by Israelites. And then 29, why don't you treat my sacrifices with respect? I require them to be brought to the house where I live. And get a hold of this. Why do you honor your sons more than me? Why do you fatten yourselves on the best parts of every offering that is made by my people? So, what offerings was he talking about? Well, mainly it was peace offerings, brethren. It was peace offerings. The priest would receive the animal of the animal, then sprinkle some of the animal's blood around the altar after he was slaughtered. The Lord's portion would be consisted of kidneys and the lobe of the liver, along with the fat that covered the innermost part of the animal. The fat on the innermost part of the animal, brethren, was offered in fire. That's just going along with Leviticus. The priest then received his designated portion in the offering, and the offerer who took would take the other portion. The offering was to cook to eat the portion along with their family. And apparently, Eli's sons would send their servants, were basically henchmen, into the homes of the offerers who were cooking their portions, boiling them, and of the peace offerings, and they'd go ahead and serve themselves. So all this was foul to God's eyes. But the most serious violation by Hophni and Phinehas was that they were also demanding that the offense give them uncooked raw meat. So they were desecrating God's sacrifices at that time. And in verses 30 and 33, along with the man of God continues to tell Eli that his descendants will be cut short. And most of his, Phinehas, his son, his wife was having a child, and he died. So most of them didn't live very long. So there's where that red dot comes on that graph. As for his sons, let's read on the starting on the verse 34 of that same chapter. Something's going to happen to your sons, Hophni and Phinehas, that man of God tells them. When it does, it will show you that I am saying, what I'm saying is true. They will both die on the same day. 35, I will raise up for myself a faithful priest. He will do what my heart and wants them to do. Hophni and Phinehas made their choice, brethren, and the consequences they suffered. But Eli chose not to correct his sons. Now, I did a little studying on this, and some rabbinic literature states that at that time Eli was blind. That's why a lot of these verses you can hear the people saying. Eli was being told this instead of him seeing it. That's what was the understanding. But yet, even if he was blind, if If they told him that, he should have acted. Now, this is what I'm getting at, brethren, is Eli's had a responsibility. His responsibility was a heavy one. Remember, he was in charge of the 12 tribes of Israel, and he had a direct connection with God. Plus, he was on the judgment seat. He chose not to do anything until things got so out of hand that his sons lost respect for him. Phinehas was predestined to be a Levitical priest. And a lot of scribes believe that he was already acting as a high priest. And under that chart, you can see Phinehas was already filling in for Eli. But because they were so evil, they chose to be evil and took advantage of their positions, power, and money. Many in this day society who have behaved wrongly treat people through wrongly, but yet they do not want to pay consequences. Nobody wants to pay consequences. It wasn't me, it was over here. It wasn't my fault. For their actions, as Eli's sons, because of their behavior, the little boy Samuel, God chose. And what angered God the most was the behavior of Eli, because he knew better. Eli's failure to do anything about his son's action enabled him to continue with their disrespect. And it's always the same scenario. He wanted them to be priests. And my little Johnny doesn't do wrong things. And sometimes parents ignore the obvious. Ignore the obvious to the point. Do you remember that teenager who ran over? He was drunk and he ran over all those. They were on a church outing, I think it was, but they had some van trouble and they were all out, and the kid ran them all over. And remember, he went to court, and the parents got a lawyer, and he stated, "Yeah, he's guilty, but he's not responsible for his actions because of affluenza." Remember the affluenza teen? You remember affluenza? It's a teenager who was drunk, and he was driving down the road after a party, and there was a group of other teenagers, but they were going to a religious retreat or coming back, and they had some van trouble, and they were out maybe jacking up the van or changing the tire or something. And he just ran plowed on through them. He killed three or four of them. And they took him to court. And their lawyer, he was from a rich family. And the family's lawyer said, "No, he doesn't know what's right and wrong. That's why he drove drunk." And he got off. The judge got him off. He got off for doing that. He got off. He was on, three or four months probation. That's all he gave at killing three or four people. And that boy got off. And he wasn't 17, no, he was not 18, maybe not 18, he was 17, almost 18 years old. But since he was rich. And then before he was, his probation, they took a picture of him in a bong party? They were beer bongs. He wasn't supposed to be drinking during probation, but he broke his probation. But instead of submitting to the authorities and getting arrested, no, his mother takes him to Mexico. So I'm talking about owning it, brother. Bad choices. Bad choices. Eli ignored complaints about his sons. He enabled his sons by doing anything to correct his sons' actions. He was responsible for the priesthood actions to the nation of Israel. That's millions of people. Yet he allowed his sons to desecrate the responsibility. We have been given that responsibility, brethren, as members of God's family. It is, by the way, we live that set ourselves apart. It's the way we live. We set ourselves apart from everybody else. We don't do what everybody else does. Let's go to 1 Timothy, brother. Now, we are we say to ourselves, well, we're set apart, and we don't do everything that other people do. But what is our responsibility? Is our responsibility just, you know, well, we go to Sabbath services. We know there's people, you know, who know the Bible inside and out. Okay, we get that. We know that. But what are we here for? What are we supposed to do? Just go to services? Go to the Feast of Tabernacles? Come out here and speak? No. Let's go to 1 Timothy 6:18. Now, I'm going to read from 17. Another teenager. What a coincidence. Timothy the teenager. Says, command those who are rich. We are rich, brother. We rich, live in a rich nation. In this present world, not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good. It's a commandment, brother. To be rich in our good deeds. That's what we should be doing. Not to ourselves necessarily, but to other people. And to be generous and willing to share. Share of our time. Share of whatever we can help our fellow man with. Let's go to Hebrews 10. Hebrews 10:24, brother. Hebrews 10:24. Here it says, and let us consider how we may spur one another, okay, that's what we're here in Sabbath service for, toward love and good deeds, okay, that's what we are here for. We are here to help one another, not so much one another, but people that are not, doesn't have to be of our faith, brethren. We are to be watchful and correct any misdeeds. We do misdeeds, but we got to own it. We can't, you know, blame the church. We can't blame somebody else. We can't blame our upbringing. We're here. Eli had responsibility to God to look after the children of Israel. He abused his power, and his sons maximized the abuse. He might have been a good father, but did not take corrective actions on his sons when they were disrespecting the temple of God. Now, remember where Paul says about a race, brother? He was 98 years old. He was at the end of his race. We can lose it at the end of our race, too. It's not winning, brother. Not getting there first. It's how we finish. They were disrespecting the temple of God. They disrespected God, the first commandment. As far as Eli, his light went out. His manner of living and how he treated people, he, as well as not reigning in his sons when he should have. That's a part of the priestly back then. And the elders of the church take the responsibility of doing that. They keep the body of the church intact to address any issues. Titus 1, 5 through 8 tells us that, what the responsibility of an elder is. That's how we keep together, how our flock keeps together. And that responsibility hasn't gone away. That responsibility goes to us as well. Paul had to choose on a certain instance. Now we're going for the New Testament. Because many say, oh, that's old hash, you know. No, Paul chose that. Now get a hold of what Paul did. I just took a little excerpt of what he did. Let's go to Acts chapter 20 and verse 28. Now this is what Paul was going to Jerusalem via Asia. Okay? Acts 20, 28. He says, take heed therefore unto yourselves and to all the flock over the which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to feed the church of God, which he has purchased with his own blood. See? Jesus Christ said, I purchased this blood, it's mine. So you overseers, you better take care of it. You take your duty serious. Paul was speaking to the elders from the church in Ephesus. He was writing, says, okay, let's follow me, the same chapter, a couple of verses ahead. Before that, in 16, coming in. Verse 16, the same chapter. For Paul had determined to sail to Ephesus because he would not spend time in Asia. Now, in the back of your Bibles, brother, you can see Paul's journey through Ephesus and Asia Minor. If it were possible for him, because he wanted to go to Jerusalem the day of Pentecost. So verse 17, and from Miletus, he went to Ephesus and called the elders of the church. He was in Miletus. He bypassed Ephesus. Paul wanted to be in Jerusalem for the Feast of Pentecost, but he found himself 48 or 49 miles away from Ephesus. So Paul didn't want to go back and then go back to Jerusalem. So that's why it was easier for him for the elders to come to him. That took maybe a day or two. Travel was by ship. And even the messenger, brethren, when he had just visualized in verse 17 what it all involves, that messenger had to go by ship and look for the elders and knock on doors and say, well, no, he's not here right now. Well, go find him, do all that circus. It'd take 2 or 3 days to round them all up, get them on a ship, and bring them back. So it was not an easy task. So there's a lot in that one verse. However, Paul, unlike Eli, took his responsibility serious. Because Paul was old too. Paul chose that the elders to make the trip rather than him. He at the time was an old man. To him it was easier for the elders to travel. Paul made the choice. That was a good choice. But he also made the choice of assassinating Stephen. Eli was a devoted priest, though, brother. He was devoted. And you have to say that. Up to that point, he was a devoted priest because he would serve 40 years as a judge. What happened in between that time? I don't know. The first of the priestly descent, also, he regulated the affairs of the people. He governed Israel well. Eli was a good man. He gave comfort to Hannah in the first chapter, the handmaid. He blessed her, and she was barren. She didn't have a child. She couldn't have a child, so he blessed her, and she told him that if it's a boy, I'm going to dedicate him to God. First Samuel chapter 1, verse 20, brother. First Samuel chapter 1, verse 20-22. This tells you what I just gave you in the Reader's Digest version. Okay? So in the course of the time, Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying, because I asked the Lord for him. Number 21. When her husband, Elkanah, went up with all his family to offer the annual sacrifice to the Lord and to fulfill his vow, Hannah did not go. She said to her husband, after the boy is weaned, I will take him and present him before the Lord, and he will live there always. He was living with Eli. Samuel. Samuel was taught by Eli. Oh, side note. By the way, Elkanah, Hannah's husband, had another wife. She had all the children. Until Samuel was born. You can read that in 1 Samuel 1 through 4. Choices, brethren. Choices. That's why people in the Old Testament had so many problems. 1 Samuel 2, 21. 1 Samuel 2, 21. The Lord was gracious to Hannah. Over a period of years, she had 3 more sons and 2 more daughters. During that whole time, the boy Samuel grew up serving the Lord. Back to Eli. Samuel served God through the duties of the temple under guide of Eli. Eli showed Samuel exactly what to do. I'm pretty sure he showed his sons the same thing. Eli gave careful attention to the raising of Samuel, including Samuel's scriptural training. One night, he was asleep. The boy Samuel had dreams. In those dreams, God was calling him. He kept getting up and going to Eli, thinking that it was Eli calling him. Even though Samuel was under Eli's tutelage, he had not really known God. When he says he really didn't know God, he wasn't spiritually connected. As it says, 1 Samuel 3:7 says that. He had not yet been trained in the scripture. He hadn't been trained by Eli. So he kept having these dreams he didn't know who he was. He thought it was Eli talking in his dream. So he kept having these dreams and Eli with thinking it was Eli. But Eli knew that it was God. He said, man, the gig's up. It was God revealing something to that boy. And he told Samuel to go. He said, go to sleep and let God reveal what he wants to reveal to you. Because Eli knew. Let's read 1 Samuel 3, chapter 3, verse 10 to 18. It says, the Lord came and stood there, calling at the other time, Samuel, Samuel. Then Samuel said, speak, for your servant is listening. And the Lord said to Samuel, see, I am about to do something in Israel that will make the ears of everyone who hears about it to tingle. At that time, it will carry out against Eli everything that I spoke against his family. And he told him. He told everything that he was going to do to Eli and his sons and his descendants. In 14, let's go read on to 4, skip over to 14. It says, therefore I swore to the house of Eli, the guilt of Eli's house will never be atoned for sacrificing or offering. In other words, he's done. And the sad part about it, you know, his grandsons, they had nothing to do with it. But his choice made it out bad for his grandsons. 15, Samuel lay down until morning and they opened his doors. And then Samuel comes in. 17. What was it he said to you? Eli said, do not hide it from me. May God deal with you, be it ever so severely, if you hide from me anything he told you. Eli's telling Samuel. In other words, you better tell me. So Samuel told him everything, hiding nothing from him. Then Eli said, he is the Lord. Let him do what is good in his eyes. Totally different attitude than what Saul did when he was told by Samuel, he made a mess of things. Saul became just. Eli submitted. He said, I did wrong. Eli then realized what the man of God told him would happen. He didn't get jealous. Let's go further on in chapter 3, 19. The Lord was with Samuel as he grew up. He let none of Samuel's words fall to the ground. In other words, every word was solid. And all Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, recognized that Samuel was attested as a prophet of the Lord. Verse 21, the Lord continued to appear to Shiloh at Shiloh, and there he revealed himself to Samuel through his word. See? Lord would have revealed that to Eli if Eli would have been connected with God from the beginning. Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, by the way, Hophni and Phinehas were not Hebrew names, by the way, guys. They are Egyptian names. Now, it does not say that Eli married an Egyptian. It did not say that. Notice that Hophni and Phinehas are Egyptian names. That Eli was probably influenced by Egyptian culture back then? Maybe. But I find it odd that a Levitical priest would give Egyptian name to his sons. They took care of that tabernacle. The tabernacle here, the Ark of the Covenant, was held. Eli officiated on the judgment seat. Let's go to back to second chapter of Samuel. I want to bring something to your attention. Chapter 2, verse 12. Now I look through scriptures here and it says, now the sons of Eli were of Belial. And you say, Belial? What's Belial? And they knew not the Lord. There's that word no. They did not have connection with God. They didn't have it, obviously. They did not have any relationship with him. The term Belial, I really looked into it, means worthless or wicked. And in some translations, you know, it means Satan the devil. In Hebrew, I went to look through the Hebrew text, and it means Satan. Eli knew he had sinned, and that the fate of his sons was certain. In 1 Samuel 4:2, the army of the Israelites soon went out to war. They went out to war. Israel went to fight the Philistine in chapter 4. And they went out there, and they had already lost 4,000 men before. But this time, they took out the Ark of the Covenant. And they said, yeah, now we're bringing in the big guns now. This is Israel thinking that. And they had Hophni and Phinehas taking the Ark over there, thinking that they were going to win. They lost 30,000 soldiers. They were slaughtered. They took the Ark. They killed both of his sons. Now, again, you had to feel sorry for the soldiers of Israel, thinking that God was with them, that our God was going to help them beat the Philistines, only to lose their life because of the choice of three people. It took down many. A messenger gave the news to Eli of the battle that his two sons were dead. And we know this story. And the Ark was taken. Later on, we know that also the Ark was given back to Israel. Say, here, take it, man. We're getting annihilated. Here it is. Because God doesn't need us. I read a story, brethren. A pretty sad story, but it says about a man who was driving a car along the busy avenue. And we can go SPID. He heard another driver behind him honking his horn and flashing his lights. And he said, oh no, road rage. Thinking it was another impatient driver, he continued down the road. Soon the other driver catches up to him. Say, hey, man, roll down your window. So they both stopped and he said, roll down your window. The stranger pointed out to the bumper sticker that the man had on his car window. He said, I know that's true. The bumper sticker read, no other success in life can compensate for the failure in the home. So I don't care how great you are. If your home life is a wreck, what good did all that success do? You know, Eli was a high priest. You know, he had connection with God. And he blew it. He made his choice. How many people, you know, get so wrapped up with worldly ambitions that they neglect or delegate the responsibilities? Oh, take care of the kids here. I'm here, focused over here. Get them out of the way, you know. Get this kid out of here. No. It's our responsibility. It's our responsibility. Eli chose to do so immersed in priestly duties. Maybe he did. And maybe it took too much of his time. Hophni and Phinehas were trained, brethren. They were trained, but they were grown men, and they knew better. They knew better. And the sons of Belial, well, you'll see Belial sprinkled all through the Old and New Testament. And all it means is signifies merely sons of worthlessness, good for nothing, corrupt. As far as Eli knew better. The thing he was a good priest. But remember, brethren, that was their job. They got paid to do that. The farmers that helped, support the Levitical priesthood, there's nobody, if their failure, or their crops failed, there was nothing for them. But the Levitical priests had something coming in all the time, along with something to eat. So they knew better. He carried out his duty accordingly. He did his job. If not, he wouldn't have been there for 40 years. You've heard of the saying, there's no bigger fool than an old fool? Yeah. It's referencing the older generation. We older generation should know better. And remember, that's why Paul was referring to this life as a race. Not a race, but not to win it, but just to finish it. Now forget getting first place. They were grown men, Hophni and Phinehas. Their families were ruined because of what Phinehas did. And it's documented that the same day that Eli died, fell backwards and broke his neck, Phinehas' wife was giving birth, and his son died. Don't let anything, brethren, and I speak to myself too, anything stand in the way of us and honoring God. We are future kings and priests, brethren. Let's go to Revelation 5. Revelation 5, just a reminder, Revelation 5, verse 10. So we know what our responsibility, how heavy our responsibility is. And has made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. That's his promise to us. Don't let anyone or anything take your crown. Eli and his sons lived and died by the choices they made, brethren. Choose, brethren, to fear God and to keep his commandments.